It's all good. It's all right. Everybody gets laid. Oh, hi. Didn't see you there. Welcome to Real Geeks Presents The B-Roll. I am Crash and Burn, and with me, as always, is Mike Montgomery.
Oh, what's going on, Internet?
Howdy.
Now, before we get started, and since I guess have a moment of silence to throw this in, a quick bit of the usual housekeeping. Please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast if you enjoy what we're doing. And pop on over to vote.thecoast.ca to nominate us as Halifax's best podcast. The whole process will take you about 10 seconds. And if we get on the ballot, then we can go to potential sponsors and be like, hey, look, we're award nominated. And if you really like us and stick with the process over the summer, we can go to sponsors and say, hey, look, we're award winning.
Yeah, and we really need you to actually vote for us because they have recently been purchased by a company from British Columbia. So my connections with the owners are gone now. I can't manipulate this election to my personal outcome. I feel lost. So vote.
So remember, we could have resorted to voter fraud. Do not make us resort to voter fraud.
I could have done it at any time over the last few years, and I didn't. You know, you never regret the things until you regret them. Isn't that so true? Isn't that just so banal?
But so many things. So many things.
Everything. Anyway. So, the world's on fire. How about you?
Yeah, no, that sounds about right. And tragically, I don't just mean the summer heat.
It's comfortable here on the side of a mountain where neither climate change nor your weird temperature known as warm ever touches me.
Whereas over here, if I step outside, I'm probably going to roast. If I stay inside, I may choke on the humidity.
How delightful. But,
yeah, thank God I have a desk fan blowing in my face as we speak. Oh, but as for the other ways that the world is on fire, we're opening with late-breaking Ezra Miller, because God damn it, of course we are.
More, more, more. How do you like them? Nobody likes them. More, more, more.
No, we'd very much like to stop with this, and yet here we are.
Oh my God. Like, I understand that if you have a kind of personality that will lead to, like, over-the-top behavior that becomes violent and, like, has proven to be violent in the past, you probably have a lot of instances, you know, that there's a lot of incidences that would have just kind of been, like, hushed up, buried, or people being like, no, I'm not going to try to fuck with that. That's too big, and I don't want the attention. And, you know, like, usually if you're dealing with someone who isn't a celebrity, it results in, like, an 80-page court document. And instead, with someone who is famous, you end up with endless barrage of content. Constantly, constantly. It's like one of those little, like background melodies that play as part of a symphony. If this is the symphony of the end of the world, Ezra Miller is the flute section.
Yeah, frankly, at this point, this is pretty much the Ezra Miller podcast, and my God, I'm getting tired of it.
I don't even like them. I don't like their movies. Why are we? Anyway, right, because it's a car crash and I can't look away.
Oh, and the latest bouncing tire out of that car crash comes from Variety, reporting about Ezra Miller accused of harassing woman in Germany, and Iceland choking victim breaks her silence.
Wait a minute, that car's got 9 tires.
Oh, God, we hope it's only 9. Otherwise, we risk the possibility of this being a goddamn 18-wheeler.
It's just flinging tires out. My God.
So, basically, we're starting in roughly early 2020 here. COVID has just hit, and Ezra Miller at the time had started filming on the latest entry into the Harry Potter franchise, Fantastic Beasts and the Secrets of the Film Bomb That Was Yet to Come. No, wait, sorry. Mm-hmm. The Secrets of Dumbledore.
High hopes. High hopes at the time. It was a more innocent world. No. Now, no.
Well,
not even I can pass that bullshit off. It was a less submerged world.
So, Miller was starting to get somewhat, shall we say, well-known in Reykjavik. Many had recognized Miller from their earliest breakout movies, 2012's The Perks of Being a Wallflower, and 2011's We Need to Talk About Kevin, where they played a troubled teen who brought a bow and arrow to school and murdered his classmates.
I mean, that's what you want to be known for.
Yeah, I don't know why that sentence is funny to me, but here we are.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, it's effectively harmless, but worrying. And it's like, yeah, I'm famous. Yeah. I played a character who is a brutal, horrible murderer and psychopath. And it's like, oh, yeah, you were really good in that. You are really believably threatening and predatory.
I mean, it would be lovely if we could honestly say that all it was that Ezra Miller had gotten the whole method acting thing backwards. But no, they're just kind of crazy.
Unfortunately.
So, Miller, at the time, 27, was also starting to show a different volatile side to their personality, one that began to concern Icelanders. Quote.
I'm sorry, no, like, the way you said that, it came off almost like Austin Powers talking about the Dutch. Just, yes, a perfectly irrational racial hatred. The Icelanders. Fucking Reykjaviks.
Quote, there was always something with Ezra, said Carlos Rainier, then a bartender at Prickio Cafius, a pub located in the heart of Reykjavik, and the future owner of copyright for the title of the inevitable Ezra Miller biopic. Because I'm sorry, but like they just titled it. I mean,
no, it's too good. It's too good.
Yeah. Rainier said he intervened in 2 altercations at Prickio involving Miller. The first was a heated argument between Miller and a male patron that began as banter, but ended in the actor putting the man in a chokehold and later slapping him. Rainier broke up the fight, says Miller later apologized, and the other patron quickly shrugged it off as a joke. The actor was allowed to continue frequenting the bar, which, as we will learn, was a mistake. Quote, we just brushed it off as 2 friends getting drunk and getting in a fight, Rainier said. It's Iceland. That happens twice a weekend. Okay. I will just say that apparently Iceland is a far more interesting place than I initially thought.
It's a rather small place, population-wise, with only a few major urban centers. And almost everyone who lives there, it has, like, their family has lived there for generations and generations. So, like, everyone kind of, like, it's not literally that everyone knows everyone, but, like, 2-3 separations apart. You can probably find someone who knows someone pretty damn easily. And that, of course, and you know, you add to that the climate and the fact that sometimes it's just dark.
Yeah. Yeah.
All the time. That shit's depressing. And when you get drunk and you were descended from Vikings and you know that asshole Bjorn stole your grandfather's hoe. Fuck you, Bjorn. Fuck you. So, you know, shit happens.
Very true. Now, the next altercation, and if you paid at all any attention to social media in early 2020, and all things considered, you probably did. Mm-hmm. You remember this one, in which Miller assaulted a young woman at the bar, was harder to discount. Gee, I can't imagine why. The incident grabbed global headlines when footage of Miller placing the woman in a chokehold and then pushing her to the ground went viral online in early April of 2020. Soon after the incident, Variety spoke with the woman Miller assaulted, and she recently confirmed that her comments could be printed for this article. However, she has asked to remain anonymous out of concern for her privacy, as she's telling her story publicly for the first time. And let's be honest, if you're connected with Ezra Miller in any way at this point, you probably want to remain anonymous as hell anyway.
Never heard of them. Don't know what you're talking about.
In the blurry video, for the probably two of you who don't remember this, Miller is seen confronting the woman, who is smiling and waving her arms as she walks towards them and asking, "Do you want to fight? Is that what you do?" After Miller grabs her neck, she lets out an audible gasp. The person filming the video stopped to intervene, Variety has confirmed, which I'm pretty sure we already knew anyway, because I believe this was the person shouting, "Bro, bro, bro, stop, bro."
Confirmation is nice, though.
Also true. Now, according to three sources, the woman had been speaking to Miller at the bar prior to the quarrel. She said she inquired about the actor's feet, visible in flip-flops. Sure, why not? I want to make a Quentin Tarantino joke here, but I'm not going to.
I mean, when was this again?
This would have been about spring 2020.
So spring in Reykjavik, if it's not just like a dress code in that bar, it's definitely a thing of like, hey, here's something that most people don't do. Walk around in flip-flops and
yeah,
fucking spring in Reykjavik.
But apparently she noticed some wounds on Miller's feet, which Miller explained were battle scars from a fight. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. After discussing how they got them, she began to walk away, but turned around and joked, "But just so you know, I could take you in a fight." Miller replied, "You really want to fight?" And the woman told them to meet her in the smoking area in 2 minutes. Eventually, Miller confronted her outside the bar. Quote, "I think it's just fun and games. But then it wasn't," she said. As it happens, this is a sentiment echoed by another woman, Nadia. Now, I believe this is when we go from Iceland to Germany. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And according to Variety, she requested that only her first name be used out of concern for her privacy, which, again, is a thing with Ezra Miller that seems to be coming up, understandably, a lot.
Common themes.
Yeah. Now, Nadia alleges in the interview with Variety that after a warm 2-year friendship with Miller, again, women and friendships with Ezra Miller. Mm-hmm. Now, this friendship was mostly via text message. The actor came to her Berlin apartment late one evening in February of this year at her invitation. They hadn't seen each other since they had a consensual sexual encounter in 2020. Again, tragically common theme. Mm-hmm. But after a friendly interaction, Miller's mood sharply turned when she told them that they couldn't smoke inside her home. And once again, quote, "That just set them off," Nadia said. "I asked them to leave about 20 times, maybe more. They started insulting me. I'm a transphobic piece of shit. I'm a Nazi. It became so stressful for me. They were going around my house, looking at everything, touching everything, spreading tobacco leaves on the floor. It felt disgusting and very intrusive."
Tobacco leaves on the floor?
Yeah.
So, okay, like, I'm not presuming, like, literal full tobacco leaves. What I presume here is that Ezra rolls their own.
Yeah.
And so there's just a bag of tobacco just, like, being flung everywhere, and little fibers of the shit just getting into the, into, like, all of the carpet and between the cushions. That stuff reeks. Oh, no.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Like, this sounds like that very childish, "Oh, I can't smoke in your apartment? Well, what do you think of this?" And then just throwing tobacco all over the place.
That's just fascinatingly immature and a waste of tobacco. How dare? That shit's expensive now.
Yeah, yeah. Now, after roughly a half hour of pleading, Nadia said she finally convinced Miller to leave once she called the police.
Yes. That'll do it.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, again, common theme.
Flee! Whee!
The incident left her deeply disturbed, and I mean, understandably so.
Yeah.
While she is clear that she never felt at risk of sexual assault that night in her apartment, she believed the actor, quote, "could somehow attack me physically. I totally felt unsafe," end quote. Which, again, common theme.
Yeah, no, that tracks. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Now, five people, two friends, a woman's rights advocate, a German social worker, and Nadia's German lawyer, told Variety that they spoke with Nadia soon after her alleged encounter with Miller and corroborated her account.
So good.
In April, Nadia filed a criminal complaint about her experience, which Variety has confirmed with the German state prosecutor's office in Berlin. While the prosecutor was investigating a charge of trespassing against Miller, their office says it has discontinued its proceedings since the actor is no longer in Germany. Well, I mean, right now they could be in Germany. I mean, it's not like anyone knows where Ezra Miller is right now anyway.
Where in the world is that fucking asshole Ezra Miller?
Just over a month after her alleged encounter with Miller, Nadia saw news reports that the actor had been arrested half a world away in Hawaii for disorderly conduct and harassment. And somehow Hawaii is like the entire linchpin of the Ezra Miller timeline.
It's where all the ley lines come together and converge, and they have their power. For some reason.
Yeah, like Hawaii is Ezra Miller's Battle of Yavin 4. It's like everything is either before Hawaii or after Hawaii.
Yeah, BBY. Oh gosh. BBY. It's sad that I know that. And that's conflicting with the other intrusive thought that I'm currently having, which is, what if it sounded like in the 90s cartoon theme song, where is Ezra Miller, Ezra Miller, where on earth could they be? Where on earth could they be? Anyway, I had to get that out. It was an invasive meme.
Listeners with skills in sound mixing, you know now what you must do. incident, disorderly conduct and harassment after another turbulent incident at a bar. Once again, common theme.
Mm-hmm.
In May, TMZ released body cam video of Miller's arrest in Hawaii, in which the actor records much of the encounter for, they say, quote, NFT crypto art.
Oh, goody! Yay! Yay! We got a new square on bingo! Yay! We're so close to winning.
And it's like, it's not that it's just art. It's art in both a market that I'm pretty sure is already on the downswing and no one's really paying attention to.
That's what makes it good. Oh, yeah.
In the video, they also say a patron at a bar, quote, declared himself as a Nazi. I don't think that's really a thing you broadcast in public, let alone in drunken public.
Modern America?
Well, I mean, okay, yeah, drunken public maybe, but...
I mean, shit, sometimes they're not even drunk.
Yeah. And accused a police officer of touching their penis during a search.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's an audio meme that we could drop here if I could think of the details. Well, I'll just hit Google after we finish recording. Now, just for my own amusement, I'm going to throw in this next quote because you know how I've kept saying common theme.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Apparently, we have managed to figure out as something that, and Nadia herself has joined us in this. Nadia realized she wasn't alone in her experience with the actor. Quote, it seems to be a pattern, she said, they jet set abuse. Ooh. Which makes both Nadia and us smarter than everyone who was working at Warner Brothers.
Who again had to come out and announce, yes, we are releasing Flash. We can't not. We have sunk too much money into it, and we have debt and investors. And if we default on it, we are fucked.
But we're not working with Ezra after that.
Yeah, after that. They still get a cut of the profits, if there are profits.
Yeah, I mean, again, I get it, but.
But the merchandising is going to be fascinating for that. How the hell do you sell any of the Flash toys and not be overtly pushing their face and image? What the fuck? What are they going to do? What are they going to do? Release the film or throw it in the fucking ground? What are they going to do?
Well, or just like imagine this scenario where we get something that I only have ever witnessed during COVID, where this gets so fucked up that they end up delaying the movie so many times that the merchandise comes out. Like 6 months before the movie. like you remember how early during the pandemic, the merchandising for like Wonder Woman 84, I think Black Widow and so forth, came out anyway. And you kept seeing it on cereal boxes and in toy aisles. The movies were still 6 months from being released, but...
It worked out fine. It was fine. It was fine. Oh my god, they're gonna lose so much money on this to start with. From all of that promotional shit being flushed down the goddamn toilet. There is no right answer for Warner Brothers. There's morally right answers, but in terms of the fact that they are a company and they are responsible to deliver, if possible, a profit to their shareholders. They are locked in to fuckery. They have no choice. This is what happened between the assassination of the Archduke Franz Ferdinand and the building of the trenches on the Western Front. There was just like mobilization, and it's like, we can't stop. The money has been spent. The people are doing things. They have to do these things because, you know, the movement, the mechanisms are moving. We can't stop it. And that's this movie now. It is all of the armies of Europe going to war. That's how tragic this may become. Not literally. Millions will not die from it. But millions will be lost. Of dollars, that is.
At this point, the article predominantly goes into the stuff we've already covered. But there is one last paragraph that I'm going to read, because there's one sentence in here that I need to say it. You remember the report that I read about Miller and the 12-year-old in Massachusetts?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's what we're going back to. And apparently that occurred just days before Miller's alleged confrontation with Nadia in Berlin. So, man, Ezra Miller gets around.
Just, like, the jet set comment really is the most, accurate part of all of this.
Now, in a story about the latter incident, the Massachusetts one, the Daily Beast reported that Miller allegedly got into an aggressive confrontation with the Greenfield, Massachusetts family over the mother's casual reference to her tribe. Now, there are a lot of people that can legitimately get upset over that remark. I don't know for sure, but I don't think Ezra Miller is one of those people.
Yeah.
And unless they have indigenous blood that I don't know about, which, I mean, sure.
I mean, could it's be possible, but I literally have no idea.
Yeah. And this is what I wanted to read. Miller's claim that the board game Parcheesi appropriates Rastafarian culture.
See, now that's the kind of crazy shit where I actually have to go look fuck up. What the shit?
Yeah. I'll just go to the last sentence while you're looking stuff up. At one point, Miller allegedly revealed a gun and said to a family member, "Talking like that could get you into a really serious situation." Because that's not terrifying at all.
Everything is terrifying. Everything's fucked up. What the fuck? Okay, so Parcheesi is a game that originated in India.
Parcheesi was in originated from India?
Parcheesi. Yep. Parcheesi becomes it is described in the ancient text Mahabharata under the name Pasha.
Yeah. Okay. The more you know.
Yeah, that, well then, let's see, about 3,000-ish years old, give or take. Yeah. And in 1938, an American toy company named Transigram introduced a mass-market board game version called Game of India, literally called Parcheesi, the Game of India, and then Parcheesi.
Alrighty. Well, moving on from Germany to Tokyo. I'm amazed that I'm saying this, but in regards to rumors going around on social media about Ezra Miller and Austin Butler, who can currently be seen apparently being the Best Part by a wide margin of Baz Luhrmann's Elvis biopic.
I have no idea where the hell this is going, because this is all new to me. I haven't heard shit about fuck of this.
Apparently there's a rumor going around that Butler and Miller got into a, quote, physical altercation overseas. Basically, bar fight in a Tokyo bar.
Yeah.
However, TMZ is reporting that my dreams of memes of Elvis Presley beating up the Flash will never come true.
Ah!
The bar fight, and it's weird that I'm saying this, but the bar fight, unfortunately, never happened.
So, it finally did happen, just as I previously said it had the possibility of. We're getting false allegations.
Yep.
Which is really fascinating, since there is already tons that you can actually work with.
Oh, yeah. No, like, there's tons, and it's almost more worrying about how easy it is to completely make something up and make it fit this perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
But according to TMZ, yeah, the incident never happened. Austin Butler never even stepped foot in a pub during his time in Japan. And just for good measure, the Tokyo Metropolitan Police Department has told TMZ that they have no record of the incident.
So, yeah, absolutely denied. They, like, 5% chance at some point it'll come out that it's actually true, and they're trying to cover it for the sake of the Elvis pick and that actor, which I believe is in theaters now.
Yeah.
So that would make sense. But yeah, 95% chance it's just bullshit. I would not be surprised if at some point we get out of this, or if not this, then the next great celebrity meltdown. A disturbingly good deep fake. Like, one of these days, during one of these legitimate meltdowns, someone's going to create a video that will eclipse the actual things that they have done. And the fact that it is fiction and does not address the actual crimes or assaults or anything like that will not matter. It's gonna fucking skyrocket. Just everything will be about it, and we will have entered a truly terrifying era where, yeah, fuck it, doesn't matter if it's fiction now. Yeah, it's in my head.
Yeah, or somebody is going to put out a fake story like this that actually ends up giving Ezra Miller ideas.
Ugh.
And yeah, I don't know between the two. I don't know what's worse.
I guess we'll just have to wait a single week and see.
Yeah, if we
doesn't
could please
take long.
Yeah, if we could please actually get to wait at least a week, because the 34 minutes that we have currently given Ezra Miller is frankly too much.
Yeah, that's kind of obscene. Blow it up! Blow it up! Blow it up! Blow it up!
Now, going from tragedy to the pretty much entire acting world, to tragedy for this person's family, notwithstanding, probably for me and me only. Actress Mary Mara, known to most people for ER and Law and Order, was found dead at the age of 61 after drowning in the St. Lawrence River.
Oh, that was her? Oh, shit.
And
I remember reading that, like, someone had drowned and just being like, oh, God, that sucks. Imagine, like, you know, coming up here and you just go for a swim and you drown. Like, God, that sucks. But, oh, wow, that is random.
Yeah. Now, I brought this up specifically just because, like I said, she is more recently known for ER, Law and Order, SVU, and Nip Tuck. But I would actually remember her more. Did you ever watch the show Nash Bridges?
I did not, but no, I was trying to think if for some reason I had in my mind that Beau Bridges was in it, and I was going to be like, but I did love Beau Bridges in Stargate, but like, wait a minute, that makes no fucking sense. No. I never watched Nash Bridges, nor the Bridges of Madison County, nor The Bridge.
Nash Bridges was a late 90s cop show. It was essentially like, you know those shows that centered like specifically around like one super cop who mm-hmm. was the main character? Mm-hmm. The one who was like knew everybody on the force, knew everybody in the criminal world, always was either able to figure something out in like two scenes or knew where to go to get the answers.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Well,
the Tom Selleck.
Yeah. Like the Magnum PIs and so forth. Nash Bridges, played by Don Johnson, was essentially the final one of those shows. And Mary Mara played Detective Bryn Carson over the first three seasons. And that's where I knew her from. And I believe that this might make her the first cast member from the show to pass away.
And that's going to start happening because it was the late
90s.
I knew her from ER because my parents watched it every week for years and years and years and years and years. And so inevitably you end up sitting there and watching a couple episodes, and inevitably you end up watching quite a lot of it. And I saw that doctor's arm get chopped off the first time it happened, and let me tell you, that was jarring. Now I'm depressed. Oh, that's, well, crap.
Yeah, I just happened to see that under a related articles listing for something else I was looking at, and I just went, oh, man. I like her. I enjoy Bryn. Let's move on to happier things. And as is apparently the default on this show, when we want to think happier things, we're going straight to the Barbie movie.
Yay! Barbie. Barbie.
And we're going to start. You remember that photo of Ryan Gosling as Ken with the denim vest and the bleach blonde hair and so forth?
Oh, yes.
Well, his wife, Eva Mendes, was recently on The Talk, where she gave her reaction to the photo. Quote, well, first of all, I saw the photo and the 14-year-old in me was like, ah, she admitted. But, you know, it's a funny photo and he's trying to be funny, so it worked on all levels.
Mm-hmm.
When she continued, when I saw it, he sent it to me from work, and I said, can I please have that underwear? Please? I never asked for anything. Anyways, I do have it. I'm wearing it right now. There was something about the image that sparked my little teenage self.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
Now, as much as she enjoyed the photo, we enjoyed the photo. apparently there are people who don't enjoy fun because some are apparently complaining about Ryan Gosling's bleach blonde hair.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? They're complaining about his perfectly fake looking bleach blonde hair that literally looks like it's plastic coming out of a doll's head, aka perfect for what it is attempting? What? Why do people always complain about fucking good shit?
Because an awful lot of social media are assholes.
Now, I
do, however, particularly appreciate that the first word you went to was fake.
Fake?
Responding to people who aren't fans of Gosling's bleach blonde hair, Mendez added, quote, "Yeah, well, people do know he's not playing a real person, right? He's playing a fake person," end quote.
Yeah. Like, in case you didn't notice, the, like, sculpted perfection and, like, perfect image and ridiculous over-the-topness of their outfits, which are exact to dolls that were released in the early 90s. Like, they're not just, like, going, like, oh, here's an outfit that looks like these characters. No. These are the outfits that existed for the toy line when we were children. I don't think people understand how art works, and it's kind of starting to break my head.
Yeah, no, especially one of the more recent shots that they released of Ryan Gosling and Margot Robbie on rollerblades in those pink and yellow neon 80s workout outfits. And when I say neon, holy shit, I mean neon.
Oh, yeah. No, that shit's burned into my brain. And I mean literally. That is not neon yellow. That is highlighter. That is like uranium highlighter. If you lick it, you'll die of cancer. Not good. Not great.
Oh, yeah. No, like, I literally thought, like, that yellow is so bright. I honestly thought that my screen brightness was set too high.
There was something unearthly about that yellow, and that it can radiate off a photo on a screen. Like, I fear and am delighted for when this thing comes in the theaters, because I may go blind watching it.
If you do go blind, and in regards to why these costumes are so damn amazing, I can tell you who to thank. Because another from Variety tells us who the costume designer on the movie is. Specifically, Oscar-winning costume designer Jacqueline Duran is behind the Barbie costumes that are going viral on the internet. Variety has confirmed Greta Gerwig has teamed up with her Little Women costume designer to bring Barbie and her neon world to life. And my God, the job this woman has done.
Oh yeah, and it's one of those really basic things where it's like, success is a straightforward thing sometimes. If you just do exactly what worked, you will win. You'll get what you want. And a lot of people will be, like, they'll be timid about it. Like, they'll put the X-Men in black leather. Or they would have had Barbie appear in more, like, contemporary, restrained fashions. Like, they would still be, like, rather over the top. But it wouldn't be this. And yet, all that has been done is the upscaling of what already existed, and like with just some finer details to make it realistic in a way where, like, this has to exist in the real world. We're putting it in the real world, so we just have to add a few details. But otherwise, this is exactly as it should be. Like, all you had to do was upscale exactly what existed. Yeah. And a true artist, a true brilliant genius will look at that and say, I don't need to recreate this wheel. I just need to make it bigger.
Yeah, exactly. Like, these look straight off the actual dolls to the point that I can only see one way that this could possibly get better.
Mm.
And that is, do you remember those little kind of drawing sets where it was, you could like take these little panels, arrange them on an easel, kind of color over on top of them, and you would design your own Barbie fashions?
Oh my God, I do remember that.
The only way that this whole thing could get better for me is if we find out that Jacqueline Duran used one of those designing the costumes for this movie.
I hope Barbie is up on her toes the entire film. Like, even when she's not wearing shoes, she's still walking around like, because of course Barbie was always on point for heels, and like,
yeah
that would be like, and Margot can do that. She's a professional ballerina. She can do that. It probably is nothing to her.
And let's be honest, like, yes, that is a physically demanding feat for performers, but I'm pretty sure it's not exactly the most demanding thing that an actor has ever been asked to do.
It's not even the most demanding thing Margot Robbie has done fucking whim. That bitch defied gravity just because she fucking felt like it. And when the cameraman said, we didn't get that because I didn't expect you would run up the goddamn ceiling, she did it again. In stilettos.
Yes. Oh, this
is a fucking
squad.
Cat.
God, you're a wonderful movie.
Like, I don't know. She is not human. She is a cat. She is Khajiit. Yeah. She's just hairless Khajiit.
Yeah. New executives at Warner Brothers. Margot Robbie is Harley Quinn for life, and don't you dare do anything else.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that's, a part of her, like, producer's contract.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the very least, she gets to choose, like, the next on-screen one, I bet. That shit's locked in.
Oh, yeah, no, I would certainly hope at any rate. Life goes on without me, 'cause I ain't got nobody. Oh, and there's nobody just for me. There's nobody just for me. I'm so sad and lonely. Sad and lonely, sad and lonely. Won't some sweet mama come take a chance with me, 'cause I ain't so bad then. Sticking with costume design and jumping over to the Marvel Universe for a moment, Black Bolt's appearance in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. I don't know if you knew this, but that entire costume apparently was CG.
Really?
All of it. Yeah, I literally just happened to have a post on my TikTok show up demonstrating that. And the only reason that I'm bringing it up is that it included a photo of Anson Mount in a full body mocap suit and then an image of the actual Black Bolt costume beside it.
I mean, that makes sense. To create, like, a costume that gives off an otherworldly sense, like something's very strange about it, you need it to have that otherworldly sense. It needs to twinge something. It needs to, like, twinge something in the back of your brain that you're not even consciously aware of. And so I think that makes sense. The leaders of the Inhumans, the leader of the Inhumans should not have a costume made of anything that we would recognize and be like, oh yeah, I could make that. It should be like, what in the shit fuck is that? I wonder how they did John Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic, because it would be cool if they did that as well to give the concept of unstable molecules.
Yeah, that I don't specifically know, but I would assume he was in a mocap suit as well.
I would assume. I presume that pretty much everyone there was in a mocap suit, and Patrick Stewart was just like in a wheelchair, like a normal wheelchair with no pants on. Because yeah, fuck it, they've seen everything.
Yeah. With Blackbolt, like that one just jumps out at me more because, I mean, the horns on his cowl, like that would have made me expect something like what they often did with Iron Man, where part of the costume was real, part of it was CG. But just where the costume itself, he doesn't really do anything. So from that more practical standpoint, there's no reason for the whole thing to be CG.
Yeah, I think they reached a point rather quickly where they were like, no, it's better for you to not be in full costume because, like, oh, Thor's cape? That is a piece of shit to have to do, like, digital work around and make sure that the lighting all matches and the fucking wind is perfect and, or the reflection on Iron Man's armor. Yeah. Like, this is why... when War Machine is on screen, it's essentially just Don Cheadle in an athletic suit, and all of it's just built on top of him CGI, so that all you see is like his head. He's comfortable. They don't need to have him wear any kind of bullshit.
And I mean, with Cheadle specifically, let's be honest, they're pretty much just randomly putting him into a new War Machine armor in every scene at this point anyway.
I mean, that's the real fun of War Machine, is just it never ends. It's just you can just constantly add more stupid guns to it. I actually really look forward to the War Machine series because in the early 2000s, I read the War Machine Marvel Knights series, which was really fun written, but the art was all digital, as in like reboot, and then put on the page as a comic, and it's like, oh, this concept is not like it's someone trying something, it's an experiment and all that, but ooh, it did not work. It did not work. Everything looked like rubber plastic. Everything. And it's like, you try to take things seriously, like, you know, characters having dramatic moments, and they've got rubber idiot face. Like, huh? And it's, fuck. All you need to do is draw this. But no, anyway. Fantastic, hilarious, weird series where essentially he... Rhodey's put in charge of a team of Iron Men, or a team of War Machines, and it's like what it's like trying to get other people to use this amount of power and authority and, like, you know, sheer crazy killing tech and have it not go horribly wrong. Just what if you had to take care of a bunch of, like, people who are a mixture of Tony Stark and you? Oh, no.
Oh, God.
So that was fun.
Was there any point where the art in that was in black and white?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay.
Some of it as well. Then. Yeah. If not all of it. Yeah. Yeah. Somewhere I have it. At one point they all put like distinguishing war paint on their helmets, and some of them are really like distinct and stuff, and someone's got a perfect Punisher skull, and another guy is just like, I can't paint. I'm really bad at it. So he's got like what looks like a tiny little baby squid shoved on his face, and it's supposed to be a Punisher skull. Oof. Just looks like shit. Anyway. I can't wait for War Machine or Armor Wars.
Yeah. Sean Cummings' missing co-star chimp found alive after owner faked his death.
Oh, thank God. I hope that Alan Cummings' co-star chimp and their owner are at home, safe and happy, and I hope that they can be back on stage with Alan Cummings soon. Doing what the fuck? I don't even know.
Now, while this particular article is about a month old, at the same time, this is weird enough that I got to do it. The bizarre saga involving Tonka the chimpanzee, PETA, and a protective owner takes another surreal twist, is the subheadline. Last May, Tonka the chimpanzee, an elderly ape who starred in George of the Jungle and Buddy, alongside actor Alan Cumming in 1997, died, according to court records.
That's right. Hold on. I think the lead has been buried and mislabeled. If this monkey starred in George of the Jungle, their co-star is Brendan Fraser. Thank you very much. I do not understand why they went for Alan Cumming when you've got Brendan Fraser without pants or a shirt on right there. How dare?
I mean, you're not wrong.
How dare?
I'm hoping that there is further mention of Alan Cumming in here somewhere.
Like I expect further work, like maybe they had a working relationship and it led to a lot of indie projects, maybe.
I mean, that could well be. Let's hope. The chimp had recently suffered a stroke and died from heart failure, his owner, Tanya Haddix, claimed, submitting a declaration and court documents to a Missouri judge that detailed how the animal's body was burned in a fire pit.
Mm.
But this week, now of course being about a month ago, Tonka was found alive, secretly hidden away for the past year in Haddix's Sunrise Beach, Missouri home, where he reportedly had a 60-inch TV, an interactive iPad-like touch device, and had celebrated St. Patrick's Day among a few of Haddix's close friends, according to Haddix.
Sure.
Please, please tell me Tonka celebrated St. Patrick's Day the way most Irish people celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Pissed off at Americans for appropriating St. Patrick's Day?
I just want, like, a drunken ape in full, like, leprechaun top hats. with a giant mug of green something.
See, I'm just entertained that, like, they followed through on every other detail of faking your own death only to be discovered to have pulled it off. They went to Florida. They had a safe house. They accidentally, mistakenly, in hubris, hung out with friends and partied with them. Did the chimp wear a fake beard?
I'm adding that to my mental image now, first of all. but second, but between this and everything we've recently discussed about Sony Pictures, we've essentially now had the equivalent of two Florida Man stories where none of them actually take place in Florida.
All I can picture is the character King from Ready to Rumble standing there in drag trying to pretend that he's his grandmother saying, you broke my butterfingers, baby. And coming out of the mouth of this chimp. No, this story has broken me. Something is wrong now. It's the end of the week, and my brain will not work right after this.
So, authorities searched Haddix's home as part of an emergency court order obtained by PETA. So, apparently, it wasn't the close friends. It wasn't the actual authorities. It was PETA, whom Haddix had been locked in a legal battle with since 2018. Faking Tonka's death was a last-ditch effort by Haddix to keep her beloved chimp after a judge ordered her to turn over Tonka and six other chimpanzees to the Center for Great Apes Sanctuary in Wachula, Florida. Hey, we got our Florida story now!
It always ends up in Florida, one way or another.
Oh, everything comes back to Florida. The organization claims that when Tonka was found, he was being kept in a small cage nailed to the floor of Haddix's basement. He was reportedly overweight, wasn't allowed outside, and had no companionship with other chimpanzees, something crucial for chimps, according to the animal rights group. Despite keeping Tonka hidden away for the past year, Haddix was finally busted by a recording of a phone call that PETA said it had received where the exotic animal breeder, quote, confessed that Tonka was still alive but would be euthanized on June 2nd. With officials still on her property as of Friday, I mean, presumably they're not still there now, or at least one would hope. Haddix admitted to Rolling Stone that she had lied about Tonka's death, saying he's been with her the whole time. Quote, oh, absolutely, 100%, she says, in my house, yes. However, she denies that she had any immediate plans to euthanize Tonka, insisting that because of his poor health, her longtime vet was simply planning on doing a checkup that day, although the medic had recommended that eventually Tonka would need to be put down. So, either he was in a cage nailed to the floor, or he had a 60-inch TV, the equivalent of an iPad, and has been secretly partying it up for over a year.
Like, these are conflicting rumors, details, and vastly different circumstances. Thankfully, though, due to Florida law, we're going to find out. Because none of this is going to be held back. None of it. No. Florida, everyone sees what you do. Florida is a panopticon. What happens in Florida is broadcast to the entire fucking world.
Yep. And Tonka's discovery is the latest Tiger King-esque weird story with an animal, so Tiger King has to come in. Twist in PETA's suit against Haddix, who says there's a documentary being filmed about her and the legal battle with the camera crew en route to capture the story's latest development.
Oh, Lord.
Apparently they were a little late, and yeah, I fully expect this to be on Netflix at some point.
Yep, they're gonna beat that dead horse. Hey, remember on election night when the Tiger King was convinced that Donald Trump would roll up in a limo and walk into the prison and grant upon him directly a pardon, and they would both walk out into a limo and drive off?
Yeah, that went well for him.
Didn't it, though? Didn't it just?
And apparently Tonka has not had the best of luck with owners. And at this point, I'm starting to think would have been better off with PETA. Because apparently it's been, to quote the article, it's been a saga with PETA first suing Tonka's original owner, Connie Casey, who ran the now-defunct Missouri Primate Foundation in Festus, Missouri in 2016.
There aren't any primates in Missouri.
Which I assume is why the foundation is now defunct.
Yeah. There shouldn't be any primates in Missouri.
Yeah. At one point, that facility housed at least a dozen chimpanzees, and PETA claimed there were numerous violations of the Endangered Species Act, including cockroach-infested facilities, quote, keeping chimpanzees in isolation and confining them to cramped, barren enclosures. Wanting to help Casey, Haddix took over the care of 7 chimpanzees, including Tonka, but PETA claimed the facility still wasn't adequate for the animals and therefore added Haddix to the suit. After back and forth over various improvements made to the facility, as well as a judge limiting the number of chimpanzees Haddix could have in her care, the chimps were eventually ordered to be sent to the sanctuary or secretly hidden away in the basement. I mean, apparently Haddix thought she had options.
So, throughout all of this, you're telling me Alan Cummings has been doing a revival of Cabaret? That's fantastic.
And it's coming soon, and I, for one, am looking forward to it.
If you happen to be rich and you feel like a night's entertainment, you can pay for a gay escapade. If you happen to be rich and alone and you need a companion, you can ring ding-a-ling for the mate. If you happen to be rich and you find you are left by your lover, though you moan and you groan quite a lot, you can take it on the chin, call a cab, and begin to recover on your 14-carat yacht.
The animal rights group had doubted Haddix's story from the start, citing her conflicting accounts of how his body was disposed of, and a whistleblower last August who claimed that Haddix had admitted he was still alive. After several public appeals for information, the nonprofit teamed up with Tonka's former co-star Cumming to offer a $20,000 reward for anyone who could help them locate Tonka, which led to his discovery. Mm-hmm. Which I assume is the Alan Cumming connection that Rolling Stone should have goddamn led with.
Yeah, that's it's not even bearing the lead. It's just like it's practically random art of connection. It's,
yeah,
you know, at some point. The suspect was in the state of Georgia. Therefore, we're going to call them a Georgian. And it's like, okay. Barely has any merit. If you can lead with a dead ape faked death, you're good. You don't need the celebrity guest star. You can have them up here as a cameo in the later details of the story. But I expect better story crafting from Rolling Stone. They've done better than this in their past. That's a real shame. The story's still fascinating, and I look forward to hearing more about it in the future. But you can lead with the resurrection of a monkey. That's enough of a story.
Yeah, no, that by itself, this is an episode of Unsolved Mysteries. This is a documentary, I mean, yes, in the works, and if it wasn't, waiting to goddamn happen.
Oh, God, yeah.
And no, that's without the celebrity involvement.
Yeah, it's an episode of Unsolved Mysteries, but instead of the normal guy, you've got Leslie Nielsen in a trench coat, and he's not wearing pants under it.
George of the jungle, strong as he can be. Ah, watch out for that tree. George of the jungle lives a life that's free. Ah, watch out for that tree. When he gets in a scrape, he makes his escape with the help of his friend.
Well, that was fun. I mean, like, you know, half of it's depressing and the other half was a monkey, but monkey. If you enjoyed monkey, please like, share, and subscribe. Next time we'll try to bring you more than a mere monkey resurrection. I know we try to impress you, but
yeah.
Who hasn't seen a monkey come back to life?
And I mean, apparently if all else fails, we've got the Barbie movie. This is pretty much at some point going to become the Barbie Movie Podcast.
Barbie Movie Podcast, go! A far shade better than the Ezra Miller podcast it is in danger of becoming. If you want us to talk about something different aside from Ezra fucking Miller, please send us an email and tell us specifically what to talk about. Like be really, really on point. Give us details, talking points, so that we can make sure that we cover everything that you would lovingly like to hear.
And the further you can get us away from Ezra Miller, the goddamn better.
But since, of course, they are a jet setter, apparently nowhere on Earth is free from their chaos. Well, in that case, we shall bid you adieu and happy Canada Day, which you will get this 4 or 5 days after.
We could drop the email and then bid adieu.
Okay, by all means, drop the email.
So you can reach us with your news stories, comments, questions, anything so that we can stay away from the depressing stuff for a little while. And I mean anything. At realgeekshfx@gmail.com. You can reach us on Twitter at realgeekshfx. And you can also vote for us at vote.thecoast.ca, where you can help us get nominated in their Best of Halifax Awards. Just log in, go down to Music and Culture, select Best Podcast, and put our name down. And we eventually get nominated. We can go to sponsors. Our lives get better.
I mean, in general, I'll take more money.
More money, free stuff. It works out.
And with that shameless beggary, we will bid you and hope that you have a wonderful Canada Day weekend, which will have happened before you even hear this. So get out.
Get out. Go set off some fireworks. Hopefully you've blown up a teeny tiny portion of your country in celebration.
Huzzah!
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain. 1, 2, 3, 4.